cured my depression. Check out this review on Whole Package and Mood, Memory, and Brain from Heart and Soil Supplements from Isaiah. He says, Whole Package in combination with Mood, Memory, and Brain, as well as eating an animal-based diet, rapidly cured my depression and suicidal ideation. I'm 20. I've been borderline sarcopenic, which means skinny fat, lack of muscle, most of my life. Since taking Heart and Soil Supplements, I've gained 10 pounds of muscle without working out, and am feeling and looking better than ever. Much love to Paul and the Heart and Soil team. Isaiah, I'm sending you much love back. Whole Package contains testicle, liver, and blood. Mood, Memory, and Brain contains brain with all kinds of incredible cofactors and peptides, liver, and bone marrow. These two together, what a powerful combination for mood issues, depression, et cetera. And it helped Isaiah gain muscle. All of our supplements are from grass-fed, grass-finished cattle in New Zealand, packaged in glass because plastic is bullshit. You can find us at heartandsoil.co. Back to the podcast. On this week's podcast, I wanted to tackle an important topic, sleep. It's something that many have done amazing podcasts on, but I hope that my take on this will add something to your knowledge of sleep. And I incorporated recent podcasts in which I've thought about grounding, circadian rhythms with regard to grounding, something I haven't heard people talk about. I talk about what I think of caffeine, marijuana, alcohol. I share my sleep routine. You get to hear the intimate details of my mornings and nights with my sleep. And I talk about what I think supplements might help or hurt, what's good, what's bad. And I think this episode will teach you a lot about sleep, help you understand why sleep is so critical. Maybe it could save your life or improve your longevity or improve your libido, improve your attractiveness, help you find a girlfriend or boyfriend, or help you earn more at work, as you learn in the podcast, and then offer some tips on how to improve it. If you guys have questions, please leave them in the comments and I'll try and address on future podcasts. Also want to give a shout out to the sponsors of this podcast who make it possible. I appreciate them all. Let's start with Schwenk Grills. We are close to July the 4th and that is a time for grilling, and Schwenk Grills are my favorite. They now have natural gas models. Schwenk is spelled S-C-H-W-A-N-K. If you've seen any of my content where I'm in Costa Rica or at the Heart and Soil headquarters in Dripping Springs, and I am cooking on a grill, that is my stainless steel, made in the USA Schwenk grill. I love this thing so much that I brought one to Costa Rica. They're a portable gas infrared grill that heats up to 1500 degrees Fahrenheit, delivering premium steakhouse quality taste. It's used in the world's best steakhouses since the 1980s. Now it's available for anyone who wants premium steak taste in your backyard. But it's not just for steak. You can do chicken wings, hamburgers, seafood, vegetables. Why would you do that? Pizza with pizza stone. Your steak is ready in 3 minutes. Lobster tails in 5, salmon in 4, pizza in less than 5. Again, made in the USA. I cook on this thing every day and every night. You can get $150 off your Schwenk 1500 degree grill on schwenkgrills.com. That's S-C-H-W-A-N-K grills.com when using the promo code Paul150. Again, schwenkgrills.com, promo code Paul, P-A-U-L, 150. This is the way to make your July the 4th the best ever. Just telling you. All right. Also love Earth Runners. They are a sponsor of the podcast, earthrunners.com. I've been thinking a lot about grounding, even more since the episode of Clint Ober. And these are so cool. These are a really ancestral historical design of a sandal, a Huarache sandal. And they have an earthing plug and conductive laces. How cool is this? So if you don't want to go barefoot, you don't want to cut your feet, you can be grounded to the earth. You can get that electrical conductivity, that electrical normalization with the earth that I talked about in the grounding episode, with a pair of shoes on. So how cool is this? This is totally in congruence with ancestral wisdom. And man, it just feels good to be grounded and doesn't feel good to cut your feet. Again, they're a minimalist sole, a Vibram sole, full range of healthy foot motion with which improves everything upstream. They aspire to help us restore our relationship with nature and rediscover ancestral roots with minimalist earthing sandals. I really appreciate these guys. Earthrunners.com. That's E-A-R-T-H runners. RUNNERS.com. Use the code CARNIVORE at checkout for 10% off. Again, that's earthrunners.com. Code is CARNIVORE. You should grill in your backyard with your Schwenk grill and in your Earth Runners this July 4th. Also, it is 8sleep.com for July the 4th. And what is so cool is that Eight Sleep, the pod cover, fits on any bed like a fitted sheet. Summer is reaching its apex, and there's nothing worse than tossing, turning, or sweating at night because of the summer heat. But the pod cover by Eight Sleep keeps you cool at night all the way down to 55 degrees. The sleep from the pod cover automatically adjusts the temperature on each side of the bed based on you and your partner's individual needs. It cools down or warms up based on the phases of sleep and the environment that you are in. When I'm in Austin and I use this Pod Pro cover, it is amazing. I sleep really, really well, and it tracks my HRV so I can see my metrics in the morning if I'm interested in that kind of stuff. So I've never experienced sleep like this, and the Pod's cooling technology has been a lifesaver this summer. Invest in the rest you deserve with the 8 Sleep Pod. Go to 8sleep, EIGHTSLEEP.com/carnivoremd for exclusive savings on the pod cover until July the 10th. Stay cool this summer with 8 Sleep, now shipping within the USA, Canada, the UK, EU, and Australia. Also want to give a shout out to BondCharge, BondCharge.com. Use the coupon code CARNIVOREMD to save 15% off on things like blue light blocking glasses, which you'll hear about in this episode on sleep. Also, EMF blocking mats for under your laptop, which are under my laptop right now. EMF reducing earbuds, which are wired, not wireless. I love what they do at BondCharge. Check them out. And I think improve the overall quality of your life. I mean, this episode is so in line with BondCharge, especially with these blue light blocking glasses, but I think getting rid of EMF is a big deal. When I wear BondCharge's blue light blocking glasses at night, it definitely improves the way I sleep. And if I'm on the computer all day, I can use their blue light blocking glasses there too. So use the coupon code CARNIVOREMD to save 15% off your blue light blocking accessories, your EMF blocking, protecting stuff at bondcharge.com. That is all under the podcast. What if I told you there was something that you can do every day that is free, that will improve your metabolic health, your physical attractiveness, your fertility, your libido, your hormones, your sex hormones, your other hormones, your weight control, your appetite that will help you lose weight, something that will improve your immune system, something that will lower your rates of cardiovascular disease, cancer, dementia, all of these chronic health issues. And this thing is free, but you have to do it every day. This is sleep. And I think that sleep has been talked about a lot, and I think that's great because sleep is so valuable for humans. But I thought I would give my 2 cents on sleep. Many others have done lots of great podcasts on sleep, but I hope this one will be valuable for you guys based on my perspective on sleep. I'll share some research in this podcast about the benefits of sleep, things that go wrong when you don't sleep enough. I'll talk about caffeine, coffee, caffeine contained in coffee, mate, all these kind of things. I'll talk about marijuana, CBD, how that affects your sleep, alcohol, how that can affect your sleep. And I will talk about the things that I've done in my life to maximize my own sleep. I'll share with you my routine every day and every morning and every night to get the best sleep I can. And I'll share with you the things that I think work and don't work to improve your sleep. I'll help you troubleshoot your sleep as best I can in this podcast. And I'll talk about things like magnesium or other supplements. Are they valuable for sleep, or are they just not worth your money? So let's dig into sleep. Why do it? What's valuable about it? How it can improve your overall life? But I think from the beginning, let's just start with the fact that it's nice to see that in our society, sleep has become something that is now cool. It's okay to sleep. But even having seen that in our society, when I tell people that I go to sleep early, a lot of people sometimes look sideways at me with that. And they think, oh, come on, stay up, party with us. And that's not to say that I don't occasionally stay up later than usual. But I think that the first and most important thing that I've found for my sleep, and again, I'll go over my whole routine at the end of this podcast, is having a consistent bedtime and a consistent wake time. And then we'll get into later in the podcast, jet lag. I'm about to go to Greece, which is an amazing story that I will soon tell you guys all about. Probably make a YouTube video about it. I think for this Greece trip, we're going to go to Ikaria. So I'll be talking about blue zones, but that's just foreshadowing of everything that is to come. So as I said in the hopefully interesting first statement of this podcast, getting enough sleep, and I'll talk about in a moment what enough sleep probably is associated with basically everything good you could ever want. You will be sexier, you will lose weight, you will feel better, your immune system will be stronger, you will have a significantly lower rate of chronic disease. We know that people who have more REM sleep, as opposed to non-REM sleep, sometimes considered to be deep sleep, have more longevity. So if you're not sleeping enough, you are shortening your lifespan. Simple as that. What we know broadly about the architecture of sleep is that as you go on throughout the night, the percentage of REM sleep increases in every one of your sleep cycles, which vary from around 70 to 90 minutes, perhaps. But that as you sleep throughout the night, REM increases and non-REM decreases. Broadly speaking, we think of non-REM sleep or deep sleep as regenerative for muscles and tissues in your body, and REM sleep as regenerative for your mind and hormones and the immune system. But it's so much more complicated than that. They're both valuable. And we also think that even in the mind, non-REM sleep does different things. You're sort of thinking about the events of the day, memorizing them, and then in REM sleep, you're connecting them and sort of what we might think of as integrating them into your consciousness. But they're both valuable. REM sleep and non-REM sleep are important, both critical to get. But if you are delaying your sleep onset from what your body is used to, you will probably lose some of that non-REM sleep. And if you wake up earlier than your body is used to, you will likely lose some larger percentage of REM sleep. So ideally, you wouldn't want to abbreviate your sleep on the front end or the back end, but know that if you are going to sleep later than what is your usual pattern, you will lose that non-REM sleep. And if you're getting up earlier, like I used to have to do in medical school or residency on certain rotations, I remember with dread setting that alarm for 3:59 in the morning or 4:02 in the morning, because I just couldn't imagine getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning for my surgery rotations. Nevertheless, I made it through and I did it. But when I was doing that, when I was getting up at 4 in the morning, but otherwise would be sleeping until 7 in the morning, I was missing a lot of REM sleep. And I noticed that in terms of emotional stability. That's probably one of the most important things of getting enough sleep is emotional stability, mood, sort of clarity, mental clarity, but mood stability. All these things are connected with this. Most of us have had nights in our lives, either because we are new parents or because we are out partying or we have work commitments or we're in medical school and we're doing rotations, that we've lost sleep. And you know that you do not feel your best that next day in any way, shape, or form. Go multiple days without adequate sleep and things are starting to really go downhill quite quickly. So one of the things I found interesting was this idea that there is a world record. The Guinness Book of World Records is 8 days without sleep, apparently. And the gentleman who did this by the third day was floridly psychotic, florid hallucinations, seeing spiders in his shoes, thinking the people doing the research with him were from the government coming to take him away. Not completely unfounded in today's day and age, but this was probably 50 years ago. This gentleman tried to go 8 days without sleep. So don't set any world records for sleep deprivation, but realize, and this is interesting for me to think about, that on any given day, we are really only about 48 hours away from psychosis. That as humans, we teeter on this really sharp edge around normal mental clarity, emotional stability, the ability to regulate our reactions to stressful situations. It's very fragile. And a single night without good sleep can affect that in a massive way. Two nights without good sleep will put us over the edge in many cases. And two nights without any sleep is enough to make anyone the worst version of themselves in the world. So really interesting stuff. I've also heard it said, and I believe this is true, that you will die sooner of sleep deprivation than you will from water deprivation. I suppose it depends on the actual environment that you find yourself in terms of humidity and heat. But for most of us, if we stop drinking water, who knows how long we could go without water, but we will certainly suffer greatly without sleep. So who knows if that's actually true, but the fact that it doesn't take that many days without sleep to put you in a state that could seriously actually almost kill you is pretty scary to think about. I think personally of sleep as business. It's something one of my friends said to me. It's not a super sexy thing to think about. This idea of sleep when you're dead or sleep is the cousin of death are overly previously romanticized ideas that I think are anachronisms and inaccurate. If you want to be better in your life, sleep more. And in a moment, I'll share with you research from actual social scientists showing that if you are sleeping more, you tend to earn more. I think it was an hour of sleep per night led to improved earnings in terms of wages. So most of us would like to earn more money. Well, perhaps one of the less thought about ways to do that is to sleep more. And we know that more sleep, that adequate sleep, leads to significant improvements in creativity, emotional stability, as I mentioned. And that often leads to better performance at work, in your family, in your relationships. And that leads to a better life. So if you want to earn more money, maybe the answer is just getting to bed early and sleeping. So how much is enough? This is going to vary from person to person, but I think that 7.5 to 8 hours is probably the ideal amount of sleep for the vast majority of humans. I've heard it said that many people think that they're part of this select few people who can sleep less than 6 hours a night and be fine. And it's a fraction of the population, perhaps 1 or 0.5% of the population who can actually do that. A lot of us think that we're superhuman and that we're on our best performance with 6 hours a night. But I think the vast majority of us, 97, 99%, need 7.5 to 8 hours of true sleep. That's not just time in bed, of sleep to function best every day. You will know this. You don't need a sleep tracking device necessarily to know when your sleep is ideal. But for the purposes of this podcast, I will think of 8 hours of sleep, not time in bed, as the optimal amount. And indeed, there's research showing that sleeping less than 6 hours versus sleeping 8 hours a night leads to at least a 2 times increased risk of almost every chronic illness there is. So this is obviously consistently sleeping less than 6 hours a night, but cardiovascular disease, cancer, dementia, metabolic illness, obesity, all significantly increased if you're sleeping less than 6 hours a night chronically. And many of you listening to this podcast may be sleeping less than 6 hours a night consistently. And again, I sort of think back to the time when I was in my residency at the University of Washington. On my medicine rotations, there were multiple days that we would do 36-hour shifts. And in that 36 hours that I was in the hospital straight, I would maybe get 1 or 2 hours of sleep. Medical training is ridiculous and does not train doctors in the right way, in any way, shape, or form. You've heard me talk about in the past the fact that I think that the nutrition training in medicine is abysmal, but the way that we train our physicians, I think, is nearly criminal, and it's quite frustrating to me. But thankfully, I'm through all of that and survived, which is a testament to the fact that if you're not sleeping well now and you start sleeping well, you can certainly improve your health, but perhaps a little bit of the gray hairs that I have are related to that. Who knows? So as I was doing research for this podcast, I came across some very interesting articles. There's so much published on sleep, but some of the more striking ones I wanted to share with you guys. We often think of the immune system as being critical to helping us have resistance to viruses, bacteria, all these sorts of things. And this is true, whether the pathogens are coming to you from your kids, bringing them home at school, people at your work, having a strong immune system is essential to not getting taken down by a cold or other illnesses that are all around us that are communicable. Well, what we know about sleep is that sleeping 4 hours a night versus 8 hours reduced NK cell activity. Natural killer cells are part of the innate immune system. They're an essential part of your immune system. There was essentially a 30% reduction in the activity of NK cells from just one night of sleep deprivation between 3 a.m. and 7 a.m. in humans. So the researcher's name is Michael Irwin. I'll do a screen share of the study now. He says, after a night of sleep deprivation between 3 and 7 a.m., NK cell activity was reduced in 18 of the 23 subjects with an average lytic activity significantly reduced to 72% of the mean of those separate baseline values. After a night of returned nocturnal sleep, NK cell activity had returned to baseline levels. So that's good news that after one night of good sleep, the NK cell activity goes back to normal. But it's important to know that a single night of sleep deprivation, 3 a.m. to 7 a.m., which is again going to be more of your REM sleep, will lead to an NK cell activity that's about 70% of your normal baseline, so a 30% reduction. That's a significant impairment in your immune system. That is probably going to happen across all of your immune cell types. And it's just an indication of the broader concept that not sleeping enough will reduce your immune activity. So it's going to make you more susceptible to getting colds, to getting flus, to getting bacterial infections, all those things. And the more that you're deprived of sleep, the more often you're going to have that susceptibility. This is going to be a hole in your armor that you don't want to have. I mentioned earlier that sleeping more has been associated with earning more. Again, we all want to earn more money. There's more very interesting research from social scientists, Matthew Gibson and Jeffrey Schrader. As you can see in this article, Time Use and Labor Productivity, the Returns to Sleep, They say a 1 hour increase in location average weekly sleep increases earnings by 1.1% in the short run and by 5% in the long run. 5% may not sound like a lot, but think about how much you pay in state income tax if you're in a state that has that. It's like getting rid of at least half of your state income tax. And a 5% increase in your wages, that's what most people earn every year in terms of a raise. Most raises follow inflation, which is 3 to 4% per year, but who knows how much inflation is happening right now? That's a whole separate conversation. But imagine getting a raise every year just because you're sleeping well versus not sleeping well. So this is, again, going back to sleeping well allows your brain to do the things it needs to do while you're sleeping. It's going to support all the functions in your brain and your body, integrate memories, make connections, integrate those emotions. There is a huge system of vessels of plumbing in your brain that gives your brain a car wash, essentially, a deep clean while you are sleeping. This is called the glymphatic system. It's only recently developed. And the theory is that the glia, some of these cells that are around the neurons that support neurons, may shrink while we are sleeping, allowing room for fluid to circulate in our brains. Here's an article from Scientific American. Deep sleep gives your brain a deep clean. Slow wave sleep activity during dreamless slumber, which is the non-REM sleep, helps to wash out neural detritus. So neural debris is washed out during this slow wave sleep, during these glymphatic enhanced washing of our brain. So there's so much going on in there that if you're not giving your body enough time to do it, you're just walking around with a dirty brain, and that is going to have consequences for us. Some of the most interesting research I found was around appearance and attractiveness. And there are multiple studies showing that if you sleep less, your peers will rate you as less attractive. I guess this isn't that surprising. Most of us look at someone who is not sleeping well or look at ourselves in the mirror when we're not sleeping well and think, oh, you don't look so good. But sleeping enough will improve your attractiveness. And that's a pretty critical thing for all of us. Here's an article, Negative Effects of Restricted Sleep on Facial Appearance and Social Appeal. And the researchers clearly found that when they photographed 25 participants, ranged 18 to 47 years, they photographed them after 2 days of sleep restriction and after normal sleep. They were rated by 122 raters on how much they would like to socialize with the participants. They also rated the participants' attractiveness, health, sleepiness, and trustworthiness. The results show that raters were less inclined to socialize with individuals who had gotten insufficient sleep. This might also have implications for business. Further, when sleep restricted, participants were perceived as less attractive, less healthy, and more sleepy. There was no difference in perceived trustworthiness, thankfully. They say the findings suggest that naturalistic sleep loss can be detected in the face. People were less inclined to interact with a sleep-deprived individual. Yet another study from the Journal of Sleep Research, the effect of sleep deprivation on objective and subjective measures of facial appearance. The faces of people who are sleep deprived are perceived by others as looking paler, less healthy, and less attractive compared to when well rested. So there you go, guys. More sleep, more dates. That's how it goes. You want to look more attractive? Sleep more. Basically, I'm just trying to give you guys every incentive to sleep as much as possible. And to that end, there's also relationships between food intake and sleep deprivation. Anyone struggling to lose weight needs to understand that if you're not sleeping enough, you're certainly going to eat more calories. A number of researchers have found that when people are sleep deprived, 5 versus 8 hours, something like that, they're eating on average around 300 calories more per day. And your thyroid is not necessarily going to increase and burn that, as I've spoken about in the past. I think that there is some variability in the amount of calories that people will burn on a daily basis when they're healthy and metabolically healthy and sleeping well, meaning that for myself and many others, if you eat more, oftentimes your thyroid will burn more and you may not gain weight. But if you're not sleeping well, we know you are more metabolically unwell. You're going to have a higher fasting insulin. You're going to have more insulin resistance, and you're going to crave worse food. So you're going to make worse food decisions. You're going to crave things like bread, pasta, cookies, candies, pizza, probably seed oils. So if you want to make good food decisions, sleeping enough will enable you to do that in a better way. Again, all of this comes back to the myriad benefits of getting enough sleep: creativity, emotional stability, attractiveness, social connectedness, immune system, decreased risk of all cardiovascular disease, all chronic disease connected with the immune system, and insulin resistance. So the body needs this time to replenish. And there are interesting examples of athletes. Most recently, I think that there was an example of a basketball player, Andre Iguodala, who was featured in a sleep documentary. Apparently within the NBA, there has been this culture of overworking around Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant. You know, you can sleep when you're dead and there's somebody in the gym working harder than you. You're going to be a better professional athlete if you just work harder, 3 practices a day plus lifting. Well, for any athletes out there, understand that there is a point of diminishing returns. You must sleep enough to manifest the benefits of all those gains you're making, whether you're shooting basketballs or you're playing lacrosse or you're playing football. If you want to integrate those things into your brain, you must sleep enough, and you must sleep enough to repair all the tissues of your body that are being damaged or at least stressed during those activities. I remember when I was in medical school, I started doing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu for the first couple of years. And believe me, between studying for medical school and putting Jiu-Jitsu in my brain, I think that during REM sleep and slow wave sleep, non-REM sleep, my brain was integrating all sorts of things. And I could totally tell that if I hadn't slept enough, I was not going to perform as well at Jiu-Jitsu on the mats or in medical school during those years. Now, incidentally, I did no gi. I didn't like the gi, but don't hold that against me. That's a whole separate story. If you are looking to leverage your sleeping in a learning type context, intuitively, we probably already understand the truth, which appears to be that if you sleep before you learn something, as in sleeping enough before a day of studying, before an exam, you are going to enhance your ability to learn that information. If you sleep after, you're going to integrate it and remember it better. So showing up to a study session well slept is going to enhance your ability to intake that material. And then sleeping after that study session is going to enhance your integration and your memory for that material. So say you have a project at work and you want to do some research for that project, getting enough sleep the night before is critical to do that learning. And sleeping after is critical to processing all of that. There are so many people throughout history that have talked about sleeping on it, this idea of a serious decision and giving your body time to process it. It's something that I've started doing too, and I think it's quite wise for all of us with big decisions, whether it's buying a house, big relationship changes, things with our children's lives that are important, moves, job changes, job acceptances, changing jobs, ending, beginning relationships, all these things. Sleeping on it for a night actually has clinical data, and we often wake up with a either more secure sense in our decision or perhaps some concerns about the decision. Maybe we've even changed our mind. So sleeping on a decision that you're not sure about is never a bad idea in my view. So let's revisit the idea of how much sleep and when to sleep. Apparently, according to the research, there appear to be chronotypes, with maybe 40% of the population being morning people, getting their cortisol peak early in the morning with this cortisol awakening response, people that get a melatonin surge in the evening earlier, which leads them to sleep. And then maybe 30% of the population being delayed sleepers or night owls. I have some questions about that, and I'll talk about that later when I talk about grounding. I wonder if this would change if people would ground. Again, I'll talk about the research with grounding in a moment. But that's what the research shows at this point, that if you tend to be a night owl, maybe that's just the way you are. But I wonder if you did more grounding, if that could change your sleep onset time. There does seem to be a significant amount of research suggesting that for teenagers, they get a melatonin peak later in the night and they tend to go to sleep later. Who knows why this is evolutionarily? But one of the things that's always bothered me is the early start of school for kids. I think one of the most important things that we should be allowing our children to do is sleep as late as they want. If your teenager, perhaps not great if your teenager wants to stay up until 2 or 3 in the morning on TikTok or blue light, that's something else I'll talk about in a moment with blue light, all these things that can interfere with sleep. But if your teenager wants to naturally go to sleep at 10 or 11 and wake up at 8, that's probably pretty reasonable for them, except that a lot of schools start at 8 or 8:30. So it makes it hard for them to have their natural rhythm. And I think that more schools are starting to catch on to this. And especially teenagers, but even elementary school kids, letting them sleep is critical. When I go back to Virginia, I see my sister, my niece, and nephew. If my niece and nephew, who are 5 and 3 respectively, are sleeping in the morning, I'm always happy when my sister just lets them sleep as late as they want. I know there's complications with nap times and all these things, but I think letting humans sleep as late into the morning as we can, it's not a bad thing given that you're going to sleep at a consistent time. So this is another point that I want to reiterate, that a consistent sleep and wake time is critical. If you're moving that around on a day-to-day basis, it's going to be very hard for your body to know when the melatonin peak should come and when you should be having that cortisol awakening response. So moving your sleep times around is very hard for the body. But if you're consistently going to sleep at 10:30 or 11 and you're consistently getting up at 7:30, that's probably fine. Even though I may go to sleep at 8:15 or 8:30 here in Costa Rica, which is actually what I do, but then I get up at 5 or 5:30. But this is also dependent on the light cycles. And I find that my sleep times vary based on where I am in the world. When I'm in Texas or California now, at this time of the year, in June, I'll go to sleep later because it's light out later, and I'll sleep in later because it's dark later in the morning. In Costa Rica, where I live most of the time, I'm near the equator, and it's about 6 hours, and it's about 12 hours of daylight and 12 hours of darkness almost all year round. There's a little bit of variation, but nothing like latitudes that are further from the equator. So most days, it's dark here by 6 or 6:15, and by 8:15, I've had darkness around my house because I don't use blue lights. I don't use any lights that are not red after dark. I'll tell you guys about this in a moment. And I'm tired. I'm yawning and I go to sleep. And then I use an eye mask at night to help with some of the morning sunlight, but I'll still wake up at around 5:15 to 5:45, depending on when exactly I've gone to sleep and how tired I am from the day before, which works out great because that's about sunrise in Costa Rica and I can be in the water and surfing without many people in the water. Anyone who's a surfer knows that earlier in the morning is often better for surfing depending on tides and where you are. But where I am, pretty consistently at 5:30 to 6:30 in the morning, it's glassy waves, which means there's not a lot of wind on the waves. The waves are much better quality. So I like being out there first thing in the morning. That's just my surfer sort of schedule. And then getting up at 5:30 in the morning, I'm often tired again by 8 or 8:15, even 8:30. And I'm back to sleep. So maybe this is a moment to just take a digression and tell you guys about my routine. Then I'll get back into some of the research. I do want to get into coffee, marijuana, and all these other things. So say what you will about my life. This is just how I do it. It's not how you must do it, but it's how I've chosen to program my life. I'm recording this podcast about midday. Obviously, I'm in my podcast studio, so there are blue lights on, but it's also bright outside. I try to get as much sunlight in my eyes first thing in the morning when I wake up. And this is not with contacts or sunglasses, which I think can impair your eyes and your suprachiasmatic nucleus and your brain, the ability of your body to tell what time of day it is. We'll be confused if you're wearing sunglasses. Some may say, oh, the pale eyes must use sunglasses to protect their eyes. But I'm not convinced that sunlight in your eyes is harmful for humans. That's a whole separate podcast, perhaps, on cataracts. I don't think sunlight necessarily causes cataracts unless it's very, very intense. But I live in Costa Rica. I live at the 8th north latitude from the equator. I have brown eyes, but sometimes they have some green in them. And I never feel like I need to use sunglasses. If I go out in the middle of the day, I'd probably put a hat on my face to protect my face from sun. I've done stuff on sunscreen and tanning. I don't really fear the sun, but I don't want to get my face burned in the middle of the day. But I'm fine with the rest of my body getting tan. And as you can tell, I'm pretty tan being here in Costa Rica. So first thing in the morning, 5:30, I'm up, I'm out of bed. If you've seen my reels, I turn the Wi-Fi on and I go outside in the sunlight and I stand on the ground. So I am grounding first thing in the morning. I did a podcast a few weeks ago with Clint Ober on grounding. And one of the most interesting parts of that podcast was this idea that as the Earth rotates on its axis, there appears to be a testable, reproducible electrical signal in the Earth that is different. So there may be some circadian rhythmicity to grounding as well, which means I'm not just going outside and sitting on my deck, wood deck. I want to touch the earth with my feet and ground first thing in the morning. I'm also now using a grounding mat when I'm sleeping and when I am doing the podcast. I'm grounding as much as possible. I'm really fascinated by this. Again, refer to the podcast with Clint Ober if you're interested in that. But as I go to Greece, I'm going to do an experiment on jet lag and this idea that will my jet lag be worse? I think Greece is 9 hours ahead of where I am in Costa Rica right now. So it's quite a significant jump. Will my jet lag be any worse or better if I try and ground? So the goal is to fly to Athens and get in the ocean as soon as possible for 15 to 20 or 30 minutes to try and ground in Athens and see if that helps reset my circadian rhythms. And then going into the ocean or touching the bare earth every morning with sun, we'll see. When I went to Tanzania, I was not thinking about it this way. And Tanzania is not necessarily a place to walk around with bare feet. So I don't think I did any grounding when I was in Tanzania. Nothing significant. I certainly wasn't barefoot when I was with the Hadza. I did try to get out in the morning, but I wasn't walking barefoot perhaps as much as I should have. That was a tough jet lag for me. I believe that was also 9 or 10 hours from Austin at the time to Tanzania. Regardless, first thing I do in the morning, I get up, sunlight in my eyes. I do some stretching. I have a band. I do shoulder rotations. I've shown this on social media in the past. I can show it again if you guys are interested. We may even be able to put a clip in the podcast of me doing shoulder rotations. I think they're called shoulder dislocates. I'll do air squats with the band over my head, and I will face the sun and ground for 5 to 10 minutes in the morning, first thing. Then I do my morning stuff where I eat, I go surf. Again, I'm grounding in the ocean when I'm surfing. I'm looking at the bright sunlight while I'm surfing. I think it's a great way to start my morning. Not everyone can do that, but I think that almost everyone can ground and look at the sunlight first thing in the morning. Throughout the day, I'm thinking about sunlight. I'm trying to get out throughout the day. I'm trying to ground as much as I can during the day. And then really the sleep routine starts again in earnest around the afternoon. As it starts to get dark, as twilight approaches, I'm thinking about avoiding blue light from computer screens. There's a program called Iris. I believe it's iristech.co, iristech.co. You can take all of the blue light out of your screen and you can change the Kelvins, which is the K rating of your screen, the heat intensity, how bright your screen is. Obviously, I'm trying not to podcast being blasted by blue light in the evenings, especially as the sun is setting. And I will change the settings on my iPhone, something I've done Instagram content about in the past, where you can take all the blue light off your iPhone with the color filters. You can just search color filters or color tint. You can go to color tint and move that slider all the way to the right, and you'll see your phone go massively orange. It's a little bit hard to read your phone when it's that orange, and you can dial it back a little bit if you want, but that'll take the blue light out of your phone. There is pretty significant research that I'll show you that blue light can affect melatonin production in humans and affect sleepiness in negative ways. So being off your phone, not doing stimulating things late at night is good for your sleep. And I do this because for me, sleep is business. Everything I feel like I'm doing in the world that's good right now is creative. I want to be clear. I want to be clear with my team. I want to be emotionally stable. I want to surf well. I want to be kind to people in my life. I want to make good decisions. And so I need the currency of sleep to allow me to do the most good in the world. So after dark, yes, you heard me earlier, all of the lights in my house are red. And not just any red, not LED red, because that's going to have flicker. It's incandescent red. Now, that may have flicker as well, but I believe it's less. And I like the incandescent red bulbs. You can find them on Amazon. So every light bulb in my house after dark is incandescent red. So if you come to my house for dinner and it's 6:30, which sometimes I eat at 6:30, yes, we're eating dinner in red lights or candles. I've really enjoyed using candles and low light at night, beeswax candles, not something like paraffin. I don't like the smell of those. I'm certainly not going to use any fragranced candles or any bullshit in the candle unless it's something like an essential oil. But I love a simple beeswax candle. And I'm in Costa Rica, so all my doors and windows are open. It's open air. Understand that candles will affect indoor air quality, especially things that are not beeswax. So I'm using candles. I'm using incandescent red light bulbs, the kind that is hard to find at Home Depot, but you can find on Amazon in my house at night. And I'm using a grounding mat while I sleep now. I think this is interesting. Subjectively, I think it's improved my sleep. And if you look at research that I'll show toward the end of this podcast, Clint Ober's group and others have done studies where they take women who have cortisol peaks, 24-hour salivary cortisols that are all over the place. Most of you know that cortisol is supposed to have generally a diurnal pattern where it spikes in the morning, a cortisol awakening response, and then declines and then spikes again in the morning. Well, if you look at the average woman's cortisol, at least in this study, they're all over the place. The lines are sometimes peaking in the middle of the day and before they go to sleep, which gives us this tired but wired feeling. You don't want that. But using a grounding mat, I think for 4 weeks in the study, allowed those circadian rhythms to synchronize, which is really interesting. How does it work? Who knows? But I'm going to try and optimize my sleep. And so a grounding mat has been very helpful for me. So that's the biggest thing. Then I'm sleeping again in a room that's cool, on a bed that's natural, that I like. I'm using earplugs. I'm using a face mask. So yeah, if somebody comes to my house, I'm going to get robbed. I'm not going to know anybody's in the house, but I'll be fine. So I sleep better that way. I find that when I'm using earplugs, I'm not as sensitive to sound, and I'll use an eye mask. Even though it's dark in my house, there's no ambient light around where I live. I leave the windows open and I'll get the moonlight. And so I'll use an eye mask just to keep the light out. But it's not a complete eye mask. Usually what I end up doing is a wool t-shirt, like the one I'm wearing now. I just put it over my face while I'm sleeping. So I do see the lights coming in through the shirt and I'm sensitive to some sort of light change first thing in the morning. I've noticed that I'm very sensitive to lights and I sleep much better in darker places. When I'm in cities, this is very hard for me. So that's pretty much my sleep routine now. In terms of food, I'll try and eat a few hours before I go to sleep. I've gotten a little more relaxed on this recently, but if I can eat 2 to 3 hours before I go to sleep, that's almost always achievable. Even going to sleep at 8:30, it's not that hard. And I think that improves my sleep. The one thing that I didn't mention that I do for sleep, and I'm not sure if there's data on this, is I will elevate my legs before I sleep. So I lay in bed shirtless with a grounding mat on the bed. And when I talked to Clint Ober about this, apparently you can use a grounding mat underneath a cotton fitted sheet. So I don't have to lie directly on the grounded mat, but I'm laying in the bed with the grounding mat, organic cotton sheet, shirtless on my back, and my feet are elevated against the wall. And I kind of move my toes around and stretch a little bit. And I'll lay there for about 10 or 15 minutes with my feet elevated, relaxing, meditating, breathing, listening to an audiobook, whatever, not looking at my phone and blue lights. That's the other thing I don't do at night, is generally for me, once the sun goes down, I'm not on my computer or my phone. And if I am, it's with an iris filter, and you can go to iristech.co, no affiliation, and you can choose the sleep. It makes your computer massively orange, and my phone massively orange just through the color filters, color tint. I don't watch TV at night because I find TV very stimulating. It used to be something fun. I would watch a movie at night to relax, but I've found recently that for me, watching a movie, watching a show, which I don't really have time for, nor do I really want to, this is very stimulating. So understand that this can be quite stimulating for humans. Now, perhaps if you wear really sexy blue blocking glasses, amber glasses, that will help with the blue light. But even watching something on TV is quite stimulating for humans. So if you have issues with sleep, it's something to think about, potentially eliminating that. The one thing I haven't spoken about is this flicker rate. I need to have another podcast on this and really do research to talk about this, but television screens, computers, phones, these all have flicker. And I think that this is probably negative for humans. So even if you're using blue blocking glasses, you're seeing flicker, and that can affect us in terms of, I think, stimulating who we are as humans and kind of gathering our attention. The hypothesis here, I think, would be that if you see a flashing light, your attention is drawn to it. This is why cyclists have flashing lights. Well, flicker on your phone is so fast that you're not consciously aware of it, but it's happening. And this can even happen with LED lights. I built a skate ramp in my house in Costa Rica because I love to surf so much. I built a little concrete skate ramp. And unfortunately, at night, when I'm there with my friends, which I like to do, I'll make the sacrifice, all the lights in the skate ramp are LEDs. And we were filming one of my friends skating and putting it in slow motion, and you could literally see the LEDs flickering in the slow motion. So try it for yourself. If you have an LED in your house, take a slow motion video of the room at night, and you will see the LED actually flickering. You can see a television screen flickering. You can see how much flicker is around you with our devices. I'm not saying we should eliminate them completely. Just be aware that I think this flicker is kind of stimulating for humans, and I try to limit it to the daylight hours. That's just how I do it. So that's my routine in terms of sleep. And I generally find that I'll get up once a night to pee, some nights zero, but once a night to pee. I don't get up more than that. I fall asleep easily after that. And then I go back to sleep and I wake up and surf. For men, you really should see this indicator of good sleep and good hormonal health of these nocturnal erections. It's kind of a strange vital sign to think of, but I think men should know that if you're not getting nocturnal erections, it's something to be aware of while you're sleeping. It's kind of a sleep vital sign. Women do get vaginal lubrication while they're sleeping. Women should be aware of this also. I think most of us can feel this if we're hormonally healthy, that in the morning hours, there is this sort of bump. And we see that testosterone rises in the morning. And I think both men and women feel that. That's an indication that perhaps you're sleeping well, you're sleeping enough. And if it's not there, maybe that's one other vital sign that your sleep is lacking or that something is off with your overall health. In terms of sleep trackers, I don't use them. It's just a personal thought. I've had them in the past and just actually felt that they were counterproductive for me. When I wake up in the middle of the night and I'm wearing a sleep tracker, the first thing I'm thinking of is my sleep score is going to be lower. And then I get in my head about it. I don't need a sleep tracker personally to know when I've slept well and when I haven't. I just don't need it. I don't like this culture of comparing sleep scores and I'm doing well. And I think it's a little bit ludicrous and perhaps akin to the longevity community using these sometimes false metrics and questionable accuracy of data collection when people say, oh, I did X, Y, or Z and my sleep score improved. Well, did you feel better? Did you feel more rested? Okay, great. I mean, recently there was an example of a health influencer saying that he was taking 50 milligrams of trazodone, which is a psychiatric medication with a variety of effects on numerous neurotransmitter systems in the brain because it improved his sleep score metrics on his Oura Ring. And I thought, that's ridiculous. If you're not sleeping well, people sometimes are prescribed trazodone, but I think all of these sleep medications are going to decrease the quality of sleep. Even if trazodone looks like it improves your sleep metrics, I just don't believe it. I don't believe there's any magic pill when it comes to sleep other than avoiding blue light, living in a naturalistic way, Imagine that. And winding down in a natural way at night, getting the right nutrition. I don't think there are shortcuts here, guys, although a lot of people would want you to believe it. But this whole idea of taking trazodone because it improves your sleep metrics, to me, is misguided. And similarly, I'll just add this point that in the longevity community, when people want to say, I've decreased my biological age, and I'm thinking, how accurate is that metric in the first place? Do we actually know that means anything significant? That's a whole separate podcast. How do you look? How do you feel? How do you perform? Most of the longevity conversations, which are not the topic of this podcast, are kind of hand-waving at best because we don't have a time machine to go forward 60 years and see how many of these people who are so-called longevity experts have any of their so-called ideas proven in basis. Nor do I necessarily think we should just be doing something because it improves the score on your Oura Ring. I believe in just thinking about how well you sleep and giving yourself an accurate measurement of that. If you don't feel good, if you're not feeling refreshed and good when you wake up in the morning, you're not sleeping well. You don't need an Oura Ring to tell you that. That's how I feel about it. So I don't use these devices in the few times that I have used them in the past. The sleep scores are good, and I generally can tell every day how well I've slept the night before. It's very clear to me how well I feel during the day. And I know that I'm going to sleep at a certain time and I'm giving myself enough time in bed. I'm aiming for, I guess we can do the math. If I go to sleep at 8:30, I get up at 5:30, that's 9 hours in bed. And in those 9 hours, yeah, I'm probably sleeping a little more than 8 hours. So I think that for most of us, if we really want to get 8 hours of sleep, we're going to need to give ourselves at least 9 hours in that bed. So that's how I think about it. Sleep is business. It's the single most important hack for, quote, hack for longevity, for performance that I've ever seen. And it's so underrated. I want to talk a little bit about coffee, alcohol, and marijuana. They're all bad for your sleep. Enough said, let's move on. I'll say a few more things. Whenever I talk about coffee, people get triggered. Fine. If you like your coffee, great. But understand that caffeine has a quarter life of 12 hours, 10 to 12 hours. This is not debatable. This is known pharmacokinetics for caffeine, meaning that if you drink coffee at 9 in the morning, at 9 o'clock at night, you still got a quarter of that caffeine in your system. So say you drink one cup of Starbucks coffee in the morning, 200 milligrams of caffeine, you've got 50 milligrams of caffeine in your body, in your system at 9 o'clock that night. This is essentially equivalent to drinking a quarter cup of coffee before you go to sleep. Who would do that, right? Why would you do that? So I don't think that there is enough attention to the actual persistence of caffeine in the human body. And what I've seen from people that I know and clients in the past is that when they get rid of coffee, they always miss it because coffee is very reinforcing. We know that caffeine affects dopamine. It's very reinforcing, very hard to get rid of, which is not necessarily a good thing, but they often sleep better and feel better overall. People will say, but there are hundreds of studies about the benefits of coffee. It's a separate podcast. I'm not going to get into it. I'm really not convinced that coffee is a net positive for humans. Caffeine in general, this is mate, this is chocolate, this is any of these things. If you are sleeping like a god or goddess, great, drink your coffee. But if you're not, I think it's something to think about. Decreasing it, cutting it off earlier in the morning, or getting rid of it completely. This is how I feel about vegetables. If you're great, if you're kicking ass in every area of your life, eat some cooked kale if you want. You know, do it. It's fine with me. Eat some steamed broccoli. But if you're not doing well in those areas, if you're having autoimmune issues or gut issues, getting rid of vegetables helps a lot of people. I've seen it over and over. That's really the key to my message. I think people get it wrong so often. So I'm not saying don't drink coffee. I'm just saying if you're not sleeping ideally and you're not waking up feeling like amazing, maybe cut it down or get rid of it. Marijuana is the same way. Though we think that marijuana would make us sleepier, it absolutely decreases REM sleep in a negative way. The same with alcohol. Though you may feel more sleepy, more somnolent with alcohol and helps you fall asleep, quote unquote, the data is very, very clear that alcohol decreases REM sleep. Without a doubt, without a doubt. CBD probably affects REM sleep negatively. We know that other cannabinoids, THC, certainly do. I'm not a fan of marijuana. I'm not a fan of alcohol before sleep. It's going to affect your sleep negatively. Even one drink will affect your sleep negatively. Again, am I saying you should be puritanical? No, I'm just giving you the information so that you can do with it what you will. If you're not sleeping well or you're tired, a glass of wine is not the thing to do. Life is meant to be lived. I go surf in waves that are sometimes probably too advanced for me and I could get hurt. That's what I do. I take risks. You can take risks. You can enjoy your life. But I want to give you the tools to help you leverage them when you see fit to do that in your own life. So caffeine, marijuana, alcohol, not great for sleep. Do with that information what you will. Now it's yours. Know better, do better. Knowledge is power. In terms of how to troubleshoot your poor sleep, if you are doing all the right things, then we have to actually have the conversation about troubleshooting your sleep. But do the right things first. Avoid blue light, go to sleep at the same time, get up at the same time, get sunlight in the eyes in the morning, get grounding throughout the day, consider a grounding mat, turn off your Wi-Fi at night, eat good food, don't eat it too close to sleeping, avoid caffeine, avoid alcohol, avoid marijuana, avoid blue light, avoid stimulating conversations, avoid television, avoid Instagram at late at night. Do all those things first before you even think about anything else to improve your sleep. So if you're doing all of those things and you're still not sleeping well, then it's time to have the conversations about what might help your sleep. But remember, I think for maybe 80, 90%, doing those things will improve your sleep and probably fix your sleep issues. But you have to do those things. Beyond that, obviously, I think diet is a huge factor. Getting the right nutrients, getting enough protein, getting carbohydrates is critical for sleep. I think so many in the keto community would have better sleep when they added carbohydrates to their diet. I certainly found this in the keto community. Sometimes people will say, oh, I feel like I need less sleep. Well, yeah, that's because your sympathetic nervous system is overactive. That is your fight or flight nervous system. It's overactive. It's a stress hormone. Your catecholamines are up. That's why you feel like you need less sleep, but you don't. You still need sleep. It's just your body is stressed. Your cortisol is up. So I don't think you need less sleep with less carbohydrates. As I've talked about many times in the past, carbohydrates are beneficial for humans. I'm very clear on this. Not necessarily all carbohydrates, but you guys know what I mean. Oftentimes there's some confusion around carbs versus carbohydrates, with carbs being garbage, bread, cakes, cookies, candies, pasta, carbohydrates, perhaps more technically being things like fruit or honey. I'm much more a fan of those for humans for carbohydrates, and I've spoken about why in the past. Supplements. The data on magnesium is pretty shady. It's not that good. If you take magnesium and it helps you, fine. Could be placebo. Is it the worst thing in the world? Not really. Some magnesium will make you have diarrhea, which may not be great. Perhaps threonate, perhaps glycinate are the most sedating. See what works for you. Be aware these can have excipients and binders that I'm not a huge fan of. I don't use magnesium for sleep. The only supplements I use are hardened soil, desiccated organs. I've said that over and over. And I tend to try and get the fresh organs when I can, but I love having the hardened soil around. So I don't use any supplements for sleep. And I've talked about in the past and I've shared my blood work. I don't take any hormones, no TRT, never done any of that. It's not a bad thing. I want to be upfront about what I've done in my own life and what the physique that you've seen on social media or whatever shows. As a 45-year-old man, I think that I have a pretty good physique and my testosterone is 800 usually when I do my blood work. And I've shown that multiple times on this podcast. So if magnesium helps, great. If it doesn't help, it's probably not worth taking. You can get plenty of magnesium in your foods. I've done posts on social media about getting 400 plus milligrams of magnesium from an animal-based diet. Orange juice, milk, meat, coconuts, bananas, all of these are good sources of magnesium. You can refer to previous podcasts, my social media posts, if you want to see how I get enough magnesium. You can easily get enough bioavailable magnesium from your foods on a daily basis, and be aware that magnesium may not be bioavailable in many plant foods like almonds or spinach or kale. The phytic acid in there is not going to make that magnesium very bioavailable. In fact, the lowest levels of magnesium I've ever had were on a raw vegan diet, which is supposed to have lots of magnesium in plant foods. It's never bioavailable. So that's a whole separate conversation, something I've talked about in the past with regard to phytic acid, chelating all sorts of minerals, selenium, iron, magnesium, all the divalent cations, calcium, et cetera. So magnesium, maybe. Melatonin, I'm not a fan of melatonin at all. Doses on the shelves in stores are massively super physiologic, and I think this could have major consequences for humans. There's good evidence that in animal models, giving megadoses of melatonin shrinks the gonads. So you tell me how much melatonin you want to take, guys. I don't want to take it. I've taken it, I think, maybe twice in my life when I was in medical school. Who knows if it worked or it was placebo effect. I don't take melatonin. I don't think it's valuable for humans. Let your body make it by not blocking your rhythms with blue light at night. And let's take that moment to look at some research real quickly on blocking melatonin with blue light. There is good research to corroborate this assertion. So blocking nocturnal blue light for insomnia, a randomized controlled trial. 14 individuals with insomnia symptoms wore blue light blocking amber lenses or clear placebo lenses. for 2 hours immediately preceding bedtime for 7 consecutive nights over a randomized crossover trial. It was a 4-week washout period. Distress sleep parameter subscales were improved in amber versus clear lenses. Reported wake time significantly delayed and mean. Total sleep time, overall quality, and soundness of sleep significantly higher in amber versus clear lenses over the 7-day intervention period. Smartphone viewing distance and sleep, experimental study utilizing motion capture technology. Basically, 23 nursing students found that putting your phone closer to your face is bad. Probably using your phone at all at night is bad, but they found that the short viewing distance in the lying position had a positive correlation with poorer sleep state, longer sleep latency. Amber lenses to block blue light and improve sleep. Another randomized controlled trial found pretty much the same thing. And perception of sleep disturbances due to bedtime use of blue light emitting devices and its impacts, habits, and sleep quality among young medical students. All the studies find the same things. Last one, blue light emitting diodes elicits a dose-dependent suppression of melatonin in humans. In this study, they looked at a blue light LED, looking at a very small wavelength, around 469 nanometers, and that was very effective, or more effective than white light at blocking melatonin. So basically the takeaway from all of this for me was amber lenses do work, blue light blocking works, avoiding your cell phone is probably a good thing at night, and the more blue your light is, the worse in terms of melatonin, which is not good news for most fluorescents, most LEDs I see in houses. You can tell when you walk into a house like this, guys. You walk in and you just think, oh, this light sucks. It's horrible. Even an LED that's doing a more amber light is going to be better. An incandescent doing amber light is better. A candle is better than that. And even better than that is a red incandescent bulb. But clearly, blue LEDs, blue fluorescents, these, the more blue they have in them at night, the more inhibition of your melatonin you're going to create. That's a problem for sleep because you need that melatonin rhythm. And as I said, giving extra melatonin, well, it shrinks the genitals of lab animals. So do with that what you will. I don't think it's a good thing. Just don't inhibit it with blue light. There are some other studies on tart cherry and kiwi for sleep. I'm not convinced either of those are terribly useful, but see what helps you. Some people have used other things to relax them at night. Personally, I have found that the grounding mat is perhaps the best relaxation I've found at night. So see if that helps you. But there aren't any great supplements for sleep. There are some GABA, gamma aminobutyric acid derivatives that some people have tried. Be aware that anything with GABA may be habit forming. This is benzodiazepines, alcohol, all of these things can affect GABA. It's a dangerous slope. I'm not a fan of things like Ambien, known as Zolpidem, or Lunesta, known as Azopiclone. Often these have rebound. They do affect your sleep quality negatively by decreasing REM sleep. So there are no shortcuts, I think, when it comes to sleep. You have to do the work. It's like meditating. You really should just do the work. And I think that most of us will sleep much better if we actually just simply put an effort to it and make the lifestyle changes that we should be making in the first place. And that will pay off significantly in the long run. As I wrap up this podcast, I wanted to show the study on grounding and sleep. Title of the study is Biological Effects of Grounding the Human Body During Sleep as Measured by Cortisol Levels and Subjective Reporting of Sleep, Pain, and Stress. There were 12 subjects. This is the one I spoke about with Clint Ober on the podcast. And perhaps the most striking thing is these cortisol graphs. If you're watching on YouTube, you can see this normal circadian pattern that is modeled for cortisol. And you can see all of the different changes in these females' cortisol rhythms with grounding. I think these two graphs are perhaps the most striking. All of the 12 females' cortisol rhythms over 24 hours overlaid. Some coalescence of a peak at 8 a.m., but after grounding, there's a clear pattern towards synchronization of this morning cortisol awakening spike. This is incredible to me. I wish there were more studies. I think there need to be more studies with grounding and what is going on here, but I think grounding could certainly help with sleep and potentially with jet lag as well, but I will keep you guys posted. So with that, I will wrap up this podcast on sleep. I hope it's been helpful. Again, I'm going to go to sleep at 8:15 tonight, get up at 5:30 in the morning. Maybe I'll do some Instagram content about my nighttime routine. If you guys are curious about other questions on sleep, feel free to put them in the comments. For those of you that are still listening and watching the video, I'll show my scar. It looks pretty good. So if anyone doesn't know, a couple of weeks ago, I had 9 stitches in my head. And now the scar is basically gone. It's very limited now. I've been putting tallow on it every day. Again, more corroboration for the notion that tallow is beneficial for humans and the skin. More on that coming very, very soon. But this is the scar update. It's now gone. It's probably 3-4 weeks away from the scar, maybe 3.5 weeks since I cut my head on a surfboard fin while I was surfing here in Costa Rica. I got 9 stitches. There were a couple of podcasts ago in the video where I could see, you could see the stitches in my head, and they're out. Putting tallow on it, healing just fine. So that's it for this podcast, guys.